the Buckeyes continue their up and down ways. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome back to After the Score from WOSU Public Media. I'm Steve Brown alongside Thomas Bradley. In this week's episode, we'll talk about the Blue Jackets, which are also hard to figure out.
And we'll recap the anticlimactic Super Bowl and talk about some of our favorite commercials.
But first, OSU basketball. The Buckeyes opened the season 15-0, then lost 5 out of 6, including a heartbreaker to lowly Penn State.
But then Thad Matta and the Buckeyes bounced right back, winning back-to-back games against ranked opponents in Wisconsin and Iowa.
Ben Axelrod covers the Ohio State basketball team for Buckeye Sports Bulletin. Ben, thanks as always.
Thanks for having me.
Ben, I'm going to be honest. I don't know what to make of this Ohio State basketball team. They lose home games to Penn State and win road games against Wisconsin and Iowa. What kind of team is this, in your opinion?
They're somewhere in between those two teams, because I think that Iowa win was a really big win for them. Iowa's a really good team. We saw that in Columbus a few weeks ago, yeah. And that was, you know, more impressive than the Wisconsin win, and they looked better in that game. But, yeah, the losses to Nebraska and Penn State, to put it mildly, were embarrassing. And they, especially losing to Penn State at home, those are not teams that, if you're a top four seed, you should be losing. And I think the Buckeyes are still fighting for that top four seed in the tournament. But I think they're somewhere in between the two teams we've seen over the last few weeks.
A week ago, people were crying NIT tournament. Are we past that now? Are we back on track where this team is probably comfortably going to make the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I think that's over. I think with getting the wins over Wisconsin and Iowa on the road, two ranked teams, regardless of where Wisconsin winds up, because right now they're not ranked, but I think that's over. They have 18 wins right now. I think if you get to 21, you're a lock at this point for Ohio State. And I think that, and they're going to get more than 21, but you finish in the top six in the Big Ten, you finish in the top eight in the Big Ten, and I think you have a case. But they're going to finish in the top six, and they're going to the NCAA tournament. They're not going to be in the NIT.
Ben, before the Wisconsin game, Shannon Scott gave up his starting spot. It was his idea to give up his starting spot to Sam Thompson. Thompson didn't want to say if the move helped the team beat the Badgers, but do you think it changed the team at all? Did it shake up the chemistry enough to give them that win?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the reason that the Buckeyes won, but I do like having Shannon Scott come off the bench with that second unit, and I think the way that Sam Thompson's been playing for the better part of the last 2 months, I think he's definitely a player that deserves to start and deserves to be on the court. But I do like what Shannon Scott brings off the bench, and I think he plays a little better, maybe not with Aaron Kraft being the main point guard, even though they do find themselves on the floor a lot together. But I do think that the way that Shannon Scott's skill set is set up with this team, I think he's best equipped to not necessarily start, but to come off the bench.
You mentioned that the top eight teams in the Big Ten Conference this season might have a chance at the NCAA tournament. The Big Ten Conference might be the best conference in basketball.
They might be. The ACC is really, really good, and the Big 12 is really, really good. Last year, the Big Ten was undisputedly the best conference in America. I think this year there's some debate as to that, but I think this year the Big Ten, last year they were top heavy. They had national title contenders in Ohio State, Michigan State, Wisconsin, and
Indiana,
Michigan. So that's five. Yeah, national title contenders. This year, I think really right now you could only say that Michigan State and maybe Michigan are national title contenders. But 1 through 8, and maybe the 9, these are really, really, really good teams. These are teams that, as the Buckeyes have learned, you can't take any of them for granted, because the two worst ones, I guess Illinois is probably the worst one, but even Illinois gave them a game in Columbus. This is, from 1 to 12, this is by far the best I have ever seen the Big Ten.
We're talking about Buckeye basketball with Ben Axelrod of Buckeye Sports Bulletin. Ben, to shift a little bit away from Ohio State basketball, let's talk about Creighton right now. They are a team that is just lighting it up and making three-pointers, and they're a team that pretty much everyone is talking about. I know you don't cover Creighton, you cover Ohio State, but what is your impression of this team?
I think they're a little gimmicky. I think that that's kind of their MO is to go out and score a lot of points. And I don't think that's necessarily a sustainable approach to basketball. I mean, it's kind of a cliche to say that defense wins championships and all that stuff, but a lot of that rings true if you look at the stats. So, yeah, I mean, they're entertaining. They're fun as hell to watch, but I think they're just kind of a gimmicky kind of like the you know, one of those like the Phoenix Suns in the mid 2000s that just runs out and jacks up a bunch of threes.
Going back to Ohio State basketball, what should Thad Matta's goals be for February and early March before the tournament starts?
They just got to stay on pace and maintain this momentum here. I think it would be nice for them to maybe win the Big Ten tournament. I think it would be nice just to, you know, string together some wins here. They have two in a row right now, and they should beat Purdue on Saturday. Then you got a big time game with Michigan, Michigan on Tuesday, and that's going to be a game that could really shape the way the rest of this month goes for the Buckeyes and could really maintain that momentum that the Buckeyes need heading into March.
And Ben, one more thing before you go. You also cover Ohio State football for Buckeye Sports Bulletin, and Wednesday was National Signing Day for Ohio State and the rest of college football. What stood out to you, and did anything surprise you that maybe you weren't expecting?
Yeah, I think picking up Darius Slade, the defensive end from New Jersey who was committed to Nebraska, then Michigan State, then all of a sudden flipped on National Signing Day and was really off the radar for Ohio State until National Signing Day, at least from the public perspective. That was pretty shocking, especially with limited numbers. 23, it seemed like if they were going to take any more than 22, it'd have to be for a guy that they really, really wanted. So that did surprise me. They went with Darius Slade there. This class, it's most people have it consensus top five, but it's around five as opposed to top three in most scouting services, at least. And I think this is a really, really good class. I think that every player in it, with maybe the exception of the quarterback Stephen Collier, will probably be in the two deep next year, assuming they all stick around, and they won't. But in 2015, I should say, they'll all be in the two deep. So that's, you know, that's kind of the makings of, you know, sealing Urban Meyer's foundation. I think the first two classes were more about infusing talent and infusing those star players like Joey Bosa, Noah Spence, and Dontre Wilson. I think this one's more about making your roster a complete Urban Meyer roster. And there's not necessarily a guy in this class who, if I was a fan, who I'd be psyched to go be getting his jersey tomorrow, but like a Terrell Pryor or a Braxton Miller. But I do think that this is a solid class in terms of depth and really, you know, cementing the foundation for Ohio State football in years to come.
We've been talking about Ohio State basketball and Ohio State football with Ben Axelrod of Buckeye Sports Bulletin. Ben, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Gene Smith leads the OSU athletic department, one of the biggest and most visible in the country.
And that can have its downfalls, like in 2011 during the Tattoos for Memorabilia scandal that led to the firing of then head football coach Jim Tressel.
It also has its benefits, like Smith's new contract. For more on that, we called Rob Aller from the Columbus Dispatch.
Rob, what did you make of the timing? Why do you think Gene Smith got this raise and this four-year extension 2 days before OSU named a new president? Is there any connection there?
There's always a connection. There's always, worry. People worry about people sneaking in and stealing people. You know, it goes for people. It goes for schools. You know, I was interested this week to find out that part of the reason the Big Ten, you know, jumped at signing up Maryland and Rutgers was they were worried that Penn State might get snatched away. So at least that was what Gene Smith was talking about. So there's always a game within the game behind closed doors. There's worry, and so let's move faster than slower. I mean, look at the Cleveland Browns. They moved too slow and didn't get the guys they wanted. So there is something to be said for knowing what you want and going after it.
Is Gene Smith somewhat of a commodity as far as college athletic directors go?
I think he is. I think, he moved through the ranks different places, Arizona State before he came to Ohio State. And I know that for the most part, his people loved him at Arizona State. You're always going to have somebody who, is out to get you. But, I think he fits a lot of qualities. He's a business-first type guy. He's a moneymaker, worked at IBM. So he's marketable, and they don't want to lose him.
The new president, Michael Drake of Ohio State, comes from UC Irvine, and the athletic program there, quite frankly, doesn't even compare to Ohio State's. Is the promotion to given to Gene Smith have to do kind of with that, because the new president may not know a lot about college athletics?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. Yeah, I think, you know, Gene kind of will be his, I don't want to say right-hand man with athletics, but you know what? He may even be more than that. I think it's interesting. The president, the new president, was on the NCAA board. So he does know something about the NCAA. It's not like he's coming from, you know, kindergarten to 11th grade, so to speak. He knows his stuff, but I think having Gene there sort of is a comfort, and Gene knows the ins and outs. So, yeah, I think it ties together. I mean, I think everybody probably thought that this, the timing is set up with the new president coming in.
You know, there were rumors that Texas was trying to get Gene Smith for their athletic director job. Was this kind of a way to keep him locked down for as long as possible?
Oh, I don't know. I think the guy at Texas is a former Texas guy, and he's pretty controversial. So maybe Gene was less controversial, and they did look at him. I know there were the rumors, but, you know, I've learned through the years you just got to kind of sit back and wait, because these guys have agents, even ADs, and they throw stuff out there, you know, just to kind of leverage it. So I believe it when I believe it anymore. But I wouldn't put it, you know, beyond, you know, the situation that, that Gene was either interested in Texas or Texas was interested in him. I mean, let's face it. Texas has deep pockets. They have their own network, and, you know, money talks. I mean, Gene is a money guy, and so, you know, you throw whatever ridiculous number at him, and he's going to get interested. Not that the $940,000 he's going to be making now isn't a lot of money, because it is.
Gene's been here, listen to me calling him Gene. Gene Smith has been here about a decade now, so we can look back with, you know, we can be a little retrospective. What's his signature achievement, or what would you say is kind of his defining moment?
Well, I think he's shown he's a survivor. You know, there's an interesting situation here where everybody has friends and enemies. And I think the key is to have friends, more powerful friends than your enemies are powerful. And I think that's Gene. Look at the people involved in Tattoo Gate, at least peripheral, you know, situation. You got Jim Tressel gone, and Gordon Gee, even though that's probably not why he's gone, that contributed to it. Some of the comments he made, it just sort of filled up the, you know, the pot there of how many things he has said that kind of got him in trouble and embarrassed the university. And who survived? Gene Smith. I'm not saying Gene was involved or not, but he has survived. So I think the fact that he's still here, I think if you polled Buckeye Nation, it would be an interesting mix of pro and con Gene, and nothing necessarily personally about Gene, more just the whole Tattoo Gate. And, you know, he was around during that time. So, you know, you sort of get smeared by that, but he has survived it. Beyond that, I think just the fact of, you know, the grad rates are up, so you've got to give him some credit for that. And also, just, again, a business mindset. I mean, that's really where athletics is now. I mean, look at, you know, the head coach is making $4-plus million, Urban Meyer. The AD is making $940,000 with a chance to go over $1 million with bonus incentives. And the president is making, what, $700,000, something like that. So you could step back and say that's a little out of whack, but it's the way the business and the market works. And Gene is a businessman.
You talk about how he's a businessman and how he's a money guy. I've met him a couple times. We work in the same building as him, and I've talked to him at press conferences. He's always come across as sharp and charismatic to me. Is that what he's like behind closed doors? How's he known? Is he kind of a tough guy? What's kind of the bead on him behind closed doors?
No, I think he's a very personable guy. I talked to somebody involved at the Fiesta Bowl, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, whatever it was, and they compared Andy Geiger. This is when Gene was taking over, and they compared Andy Geiger, the former AD, with Gene. And this guy was very impressed by both men. But he said that Gene, where Andy will wear a tie and is very by the book and very successful at it, by the way, Gene will have an open collar, more personable, a little not as intense. And I think that goes a long way. I mean, he kind of can go in there and I hesitate to use the word schmooze, but Gene can schmooze not in a negative way, but he just has probably more personality than his predecessor. And, everybody likes to be around somebody who's positive and, it makes you feel at ease. And I think that's Gene. When I say he's a business guy, that's part of it. I think the best businessmen are also personable. And so, he has a mind for business, but he has a personality for it, too.
We've been talking about Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith's new contract with Rob Aller from the Columbus Dispatch. Rob, thanks again.
You're welcome.
Thomas, we didn't get to it in either of the first two segments, but the Blue Jackets are once again one of the hottest teams in the NHL. They won 8 in a row in January, then they lost 3 in a row, and as of this recording, they've once again won 3 in a row. So regardless of what happens Thursday or Friday night, they have to be pretty happy with where they sit going at the end of the Olympic break, right?
Definitely. They're on a three-game California trip. They played the Ducks on Monday night, won there 4-2. The Ducks are probably the best team in the NHL. They only have 4 regulation losses at home this season, one of them Monday night being to the Blue Jackets. And if the Jackets are able to pick up even just one more point on their next two games, they're in a good spot. The Metropolitan Division is a logjam right now. Mm-hmm. From second place all the way down to seventh place in that division, 4 points separates them. Everyone is right around 63 to 59 points. So every point is valuable for the Blue Jackets right now.
A bigger question, why are they not the Mighty Ducks anymore? It's a travesty.
I have no idea.
I have no idea either. I bet Emilio Estevez is really upset. Can there be a better sports break than the Olympic break in hockey? After Friday, the Jackets don't play for 20 days, 3 weeks.
The Jackets don't play. So
right. Bobrovsky and the other guys who are on Olympic teams do.
Yeah, 4 of the guys who are playing for Russia are going to be playing in the Olympics for Russia. So there's going to be guys that are going to still be skating and guys that aren't going to be able to play hockey for a couple
weeks. Well, Jack Johnson, he's going back to California, probably going to get a tan, lay around, right?
Well, is that a good thing for the Jackets?
For Jack Johnson, yeah.
For Jack, but do you lose kind of your edge? They're on a hot streak right now.
Yeah.
Is there a chance we're gonna throw some ice on it? Not that we're playing hockey, but we're gonna throw some ice on it and cool it down.
Yeah, probably. Anyway, getting to the biggest story of last week, the Super Bowl, Sunday Super Bowl, one of the worst championship games ever, especially for Thomas, a Broncos fan. Not for me. I'm a Browns fan, which by law requires me to hate the Broncos. Do you want to borrow my Malcolm Smith jersey?
Oh, I'm okay. I'll be fine.
Is the wound healed yet?
No, it's. I do like the Broncos, but I lived in Denver 7-8 years ago,
and they went to the Super Bowl. That's a badge. That's cool.
They went to the Super Bowl. They got embarrassed in the Super Bowl. I'm gonna admit, I was 100% wrong. I said there were 3 possible outcomes of this game. Broncos win a close one. Seattle wins a close one. Or Broncos blow them out.
You didn't think Seattle had a blowout?
I had 100% confidence that Seattle did not have a blowout in them, and I was 100% wrong.
Have they scored 43 all year? That's probably on the high end of what they've scored.
Well, probably because their defense has kept them in almost every game they've played, so they've won a narrow margin. They didn't need to score a lot to win their games.
Yeah. They're certainly not known as a dynamic offense. The game was bad because it was so one-sided. The ads were pretty good. I especially like the Radio Shack taking the 80s call. They want their store back.
Right.
That was a great ad. Did you have a favorite ad?
Oh, it wasn't that one because I wasn't born in the 80s like you were.
Right. That's okay.
I'm young. I'm born in the 90s, so I didn't get most of that. No, I had a favorite ad. It was the puppy that fell in love with the horse, and they played the sappy Let Her Go song by Passenger.
It was so shameless. It was so, so shameless.
Yeah, but it was the only one. That's the one I'm thinking about right now when you ask me my favorite ad.
Are you thinking about a lot of YouTube cat videos, too?
Thinking about a lot of YouTube cat videos. I liked the Full House one with John Stamos and
all the guys still living together as adults.
Yes.
The Dober Wawa was really creepy. The dog, the mixed breed dog.
Yes.
Pure nightmare fuel there. The Cheerios ad I thought was the gutsiest ad. That was actually kind of politically relevant. They took a lot of, not a lot, but from crazy racist people on YouTube.
Right.
A lot of criticism of that ad, and they doubled up and they went all in with it. I thought it was great.
They did. And another ad that kind of changed up in the first commercial break, the Coca-Cola commercial that sang America the Beautiful in different languages. And crazy racist internet people jumped on it and said, this is America. We speak English.
Yeah.
Which is just ridiculous. And I thought it was very well done. And I thought it was one of the better ads.
Actually, I think my favorite ad was the Tim Tebow ad, the T-Mobile commercial about him not having a contract. I thought it was great. It was really light. I liked the self-deprecation.
Let's go ahead and talk about T-Mobile for a second. They do all these Tim Tebow ads. Then their very last ad is saying that they're not going to hire some famous celebrity spokesperson to save money because they're going to buy out your contract. I thought it was a little hypocritical. They had a couple Tim Tebow commercials and then one saying they're not going to pay a celebrity.
Yeah, but the saintly Tim Tebow probably worked for free, right? He doesn't need to buy things.
Well, what's he doing for work now?
How do things just fall from the heavens to him?
SEC Network stuff? Is that what he's doing now?
Yeah, he does sports for it's a branch of ESPN, which I think is the SEC Network.
You mentioned at the beginning of the segment that this is one of the worst championships in pro sports in a while, but have we been spoiled as far as good Super Bowls go?
No, because the Ravens won the Super Bowl. Well, that's not spoiling anything. Spoiled milk, baby. Yeah, you're right. With the Giants beating the Patriots and
2 years ago, yeah.
It's been the Steelers lost the Super Bowl. That's wonderful. But yes, I think you're absolutely right that the Super Bowls have been unusually good. For a long time, the Super Bowls and championship games in general have been criticized as being anticlimactic. But no, you're right. That has not been the case in recent years.
Yeah, last year was a three-point game. The year before that was a three-point game. The year before that was it a
six-point game.
You know, you have to go back to, 2001, Ravens and Giants for the last, true blowout. What was 48-7? The Ravens beat the Giants in 2001?
34-7.
34-7. Okay.
I still can't believe that was 34-7. I can't believe the Ravens team was that good on offense.
Well, it's kind of the same deal we have with Seattle, where the Ravens went in, they were clearly the best defense, and they just shut them down and somehow came up with points, much like the Seahawks did the Broncos.
And that will do it for another episode of After the Score from WOSU Public Media. You can always find us at WOSU.org/afterthescore and on iTunes.
You can also stream the show with the WOSU Public Media mobile app. Until next week, I'm Thomas Bradley.
And I'm Steve Brown.